Coming up, Mississippi votes this Tuesday on whether human life begins at conception. Would that make any abortion and some contraception murder? Also, the Catholic nun in Brazil who runs a huge social service agency. What's essential, she says, is love. And as Muslims make the annual Hajj to Mecca, the pilgrimage tradition in several religions.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics Newsweekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. The estate of William J. Carter, the Jane Henson Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. New figures from the Census Bureau show that a record number of Americans are now counted as the poorest of the poor. 1 in 15 Americans now lives at 50% or less of the national poverty level. That's more than 20 million people, or almost 7% of the population. That's the highest it's been in the 35 years since the Census Bureau began keeping track. The global economic crisis topped the agenda as President Obama joined other world leaders at the G20 summit in southern France this week. Thousands gathered to protest the event, calling for policies they say would favor people over corporations. Pope Benedict XVI prayed for a good outcome from the G20 talks. Last week, the Vatican released a document timed to the summit. It urged reform of the world's financial markets and more international regulation. In Britain, Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams is also calling for economic reform. In an article in the Financial Times, the leader of the Worldwide Anglican Communion came out in favor of a tax on financial transactions, also known as the Robin Hood tax. Williams said he understood the frustration of the Occupy protesters camping in front of London's St. Paul's Cathedral. Their presence has generated much controversy. Earlier this week, the dean of the cathedral became the third Anglican official to resign after church leaders called for the removal of the protesters. St. Paul's has since dropped its efforts to have them removed. Here at home, the Personhood Amendment. This Tuesday is Election Day in Mississippi, and on the ballot is a proposal that would say human life begins at conception. If the measure passes, every fertilized human egg in Mississippi would be defined as a person, and that could make abortion, for any reason, murder. The Mississippi amendment could also lead to early challenges in court, and that prospect, paradoxically, worries many abortion opponents. Tim O'Brien reports.
Now we know an unborn baby is a person. Mississippians, vote yes on 26 in November.
Proponents insist Mississippi's Amendment 26 is not so much about abortion as it is about the sanctity of human life.
We're fighting for the preservation of the unborn in the state of Mississippi.
But if passed, the amendment could make any abortion in the state murder, drawing the wrath of abortion rights advocates like Nancy Northup of the Center for Reproductive Rights.
This measure is blatantly unconstitutional, and we will be looking to stop it with the constitutional protections of the court.
Most birth control would still be allowed, but the amendment could criminalize using the so-called morning after pill and put an end to embryonic stem cell research in the state.
And we've stated unequivocally all along that if you're attempting to prevent a pregnancy, there is no problem with defining the personhood of the unborn. If you're trying to end a pregnancy, then that's another story.
Pruitt insists fertility treatment, in vitro fertilization, would not necessarily be banned, even though fertilized eggs are often discarded in the process.
That hit particularly close to home because I'm an IVF parent. And there's nothing I would do as a leader of this campaign coalition that would in any way seek to deny the joy that my wife, who's a physician, and myself have had in our children.
It's also unclear how the amendment might be applied to ectopic or other dangerous pregnancies. There are, however, no exceptions for rape or incest. Without minimizing the horror of rape, supporters, including this rape victim, say abortion is not the answer.
As a person who was raped and a person who had abortion, I'm telling you right now, I'm tired of using rape as an excuse. Who do we believe creates life? Did my rapist create the life inside of me? No. God Almighty created that life. Do doctors and nurses and petri dishes create life? No. Jesus Christ creates life.
Amendment 26 has broad bipartisan support in Mississippi and is expected to pass. Both the Democrat and Republican candidates for governor support it. The Republican candidate, Phil Bryant, now the state's lieutenant governor, is also a co-chairman of Vote Yes on 26.
The founding fathers said every American has the opportunity for life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. On November the 8th, we're going to give that to every child in America, beginning in Mississippi. We'll see you at the polls.
Now what we say in the law is, for convenience sake, without due process, you can take that child's life. I don't believe that's right, and I think this is going to be a point for us to establish a concept, and the concept will be the rights of all human beings, including the unborn.
There's no question the objective of Amendment 26 is to stop abortion. Campaign literature says as much, calling Tuesday's election an opportunity to cast the vote the U.S. Supreme Court did not in Roe v. Wade. We can stop abortion by declaring the unborn persons from the moment of conception.
This is an alarming and extreme measure that should be taken seriously. What it does is reveal how extreme the anti-choice movement is in the United States. They would like to see the personhood of a fertilized egg in every single one of the 50 states.
This amendment would appear to be squarely at odds with everything the Supreme Court has said about abortion. The amendment itself may have a very short life. And what worries many abortion opponents even more is that any resulting court fight could possibly end up expanding the right to choose abortion rather than restricting it.
That might be one reason the staunchly pro-life Catholic Church in Mississippi is standing on the sidelines in this case. Bishop Joseph Latino of the Jackson Diocese said in a statement, "The Roman Catholic Church and her bishops are unequivocally pro-life. However, we do not always publicly support every initiative that comes before us in the name of pro-life." The National Right to Life movement, which has launched some of the country's biggest anti-abortion demonstrations, is also withholding support. Its legal counsel, Jim Bopp, shares the objective of Amendment 26, but says the measure is doomed in the courts and could do more harm than good.
Well, the immediate harm for the adoption of the amendment is that we have people who are spending time, money, and effort pursuing what we think is a futile strategy.
And there is uncertainty about how the Supreme Court might rule. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a supporter of abortion rights, is among the critics of Roe v. Wade, believing abortion should be protected under the right to equality, which is broadly identified in the Constitution, rather than under any right to privacy, which is ambiguous. What if Ginsburg were to have the votes for a broad ruling finding abortion laws discriminate against women?
If the right to abortion was reformulated in that way, it would mean that all the current restrictions on abortions that are saving perhaps 100,000 or more lives a year, parental notification, abortion funding restrictions, informed consent, waiting periods and all, would be struck down. So, losing is not risk-free.
This has raised a philosophical conundrum for at least some abortion opponents. Do you stand up for what you believe is right, even if it means a step back for the cause you passionately embrace?
We believe that it may not be perfect, but don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. And we believe this is a good place to start.
I think we have to have a long view of history. I'm a history major. I think long. And I think that it may be that we don't taste success with these endeavors in our lifetimes, but perhaps the next generation will.
Pruitt and other supporters of the Personhood Amendment say the ultimate goal would be a federal constitutional amendment and see a victory at the polls here Tuesday as a possible first step. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Tim O'Brien in Jackson, Mississippi.
Personhood legislation is also under consideration in other states, among them Florida, Michigan, Montana, Ohio, and Wisconsin. The Supreme Court this week refused to review a lower court decision on 12-foot-high crosses along Utah highways. They were placed to honor fallen state troopers. Atheist groups had challenged the crosses, saying they were an unconstitutional endorsement of Christianity. The Federal Appeals Court agreed, and now, with the Supreme Court's refusal to hear the case, that decision stands. The crosses are unconstitutional. An Oregon couple practicing faith healing was sentenced to 6 years in prison for the death of their son. The two were found guilty of second-degree manslaughter after they failed to seek medical treatment for their infant, who was born 2 months premature. The baby died after less than 9 hours. The couple belongs to a church that advocates using prayer instead of medicine. Three other couples from the church have also been convicted for not getting medical treatment for their sick children. The Obama administration cut off U.S. funding of about $80 million for UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. This after the agency granted full membership to Palestine. Palestinians hope the UNESCO vote will bolster their efforts to achieve full UN recognition as a state. But that must be approved by the UN Security Council, where the U.S. has promised a veto. In France, a firebombing at the office of a satirical magazine. Its new issue featured a spoof article about Sharia law that it said had been, quote, guest edited by the Prophet Muhammad. The article included the image of a cartoon character in a turban and white robe. A leading French Muslim group deplored the mocking tone of the magazine, but also said it opposes all forms of violence in retaliation. We have a report now from Fred DeSam Lazaro on the Catholic nun, Sister Judith Lupo, who founded and runs a huge social service agency in Brazil. Her success is based on careful bookkeeping and a simple formula: education leads to jobs, especially when it's rooted in love.
Among emerging nations, Brazil is a leading power. Its booming economy is now the world's seventh largest. Yet this nation of 200 million remains very divided. Its poverty is on display along the hillsides, not far from Rio de Janeiro's glittering skyline, or along the sidewalks of Sao Paulo, despite recent government attempts to address it.
There's still great inequality in Brazil. There's still people who don't have a place to sleep, don't have any clothes, any happiness in their lives.
Santos works for a Catholic social services agency in Sao Paulo called Bom Parto. Brazil's government has increased the minimum wage and created a social safety net, and it's relied on several faith-based groups, like Bom Parto, in its anti-poverty efforts. About 70% of Brazilians are Catholic. Church attendance has dropped sharply in recent decades, except in newer Protestant evangelical congregations. But the demand for church-run social services has not dropped. Bom Parto, short in Portuguese for Our Lady of Good Delivery, is the biggest such provider in Brazil. It's headed by Sister Judith Lupo. She grew up in a wealthy family, was educated in Brazil, the U.S., and France after joining her religious order, where she soon became its chief financial officer. At Bom Parto, she combined government contracts with private philanthropy and built a single daycare center 3 decades ago into an organization with 58 locations and 1,100 employees, serving 10,000 people each day. It's all pulled together with a modest $4.5 million annual budget, reflecting financial acumen, also a simple philosophy.
I think the first thing is to love people. They need money also to survive. But it's not just to get money or to learn things. It's to learn in a way that it's with love.
As an example of the approach, she says this homeless shelter provides much more than a roof and a meal for its 600-odd clients. There are baths, clinics, and career counseling, among other services. Even entertainment, like this traditional dance called capoeira.
bom parto para mim é a continuidade.
Bom Parto has given me continuity. It took me to college, it helped me understand public policies, not only to help myself, but others. It offers not just food and bathing services, it teaches about the need to work, instruction, training, pleasure, culture. It enables you in a way.
Lazer, e aqui te proporciona tudo isso.
36-year-old Santos is a poster child. He came here in 2002, an alcoholic down on his luck. His life is more than restored, he says. Bom Parto employs him and is also helping with part of the tuition to complete his degree in social work.
Essas pessoas não venham só pessoas de fora para trabalhar com ela.
Sister Judith insists that people on her staff come out of places like this. She has this poem called I Am You. She's put herself in our position, feeling our pain, feeling our situation. That's how she's able to help us, and that's the same thing she's getting us to do.
I feel the young people and children, adolescents, all of them, they all need an opportunity. I don't think poverty has to take them out of a normal life. They should not live always in a bad house. They should not be always in a favela. And to go out of those places, they need a good education.
Poverty is endemic in Brazil despite its bountiful natural resources and a modern economy. Sister Judith blames much of it on an unequal education system that traces back to slavery, which was abolished in 1888. Bom Parto serves a wide range of needs, caring for abandoned HIV-infected infants, also destitute elderly. However, the major focus is on education and training to enter the prosperous mainstream of Brazil's economy.
As tias da creche.
On the outskirts of São Paulo, where many of the city's poor reside, Bom Parto's daycare facility is at its capacity. It cares for 3,300 preschoolers across the city. Eventually, many of them will enter this school.
Eu atendo aqui.
Here in this place, we serve about 1,100 kids. And given our waiting list, we should have at least 3 spaces this big in order to serve all of our community.
Public education is widely perceived as substandard in Brazil, and that accounts for the strong demand for schools like this one, run by Bom Parto.
In the 27 years that this school has been here, we've seen great change, improvement in the community and in the lives of these children. The evidence is when we're watching them during recess. They're calmly interacting with their friends, not supervised, not gated in like the public schools, where they are still very unruly. Here they've learned to behave.
Older students receive vocational training. Most are placed in good jobs, and the school sends promising students into a college prep program. A few miles away, a Bom Parto-run program trains auto mechanics and machinists.
Traditionally, this eastern edge of São Paulo has been excluded, marginalized. The general view is that people who come from here are not going to be able to climb the economic ladder. But we provide opportunities to the kids who are leaving here that differentiates them from the rest of the population in this area. We've already had several examples of students from this program that have graduated and gone on to work in the elite areas, other areas of the city.
Some graduates have returned as teachers and mentors.
I was invited to come back and teach here, and my whole family told me to jump at it. It was an honor for the whole family.
About 25% of students here are female, keeping with the trend in which women, from the country's president on down, are in jobs historically held by men.
If you can cook well, you can repair a car well.
If you can cook well, you can repair a car well?
If you learn, why not?
Asked about her own outlook, 68-year-old Sister Judith Lupo offered few words. They come from the scriptures, she says.
It's from the gospel. We have to give opportunity to everybody. Everybody was created to have life and to have life in fullness.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Fred de Sam Lazaro in Sao Paulo.
More than 2 million Muslims traveled to Saudi Arabia this week for the Hajj, the annual pilgrimage to Mecca. All able-bodied Muslims who can afford it are called upon to perform the Hajj at least once in their lifetime. This weekend, Muslims also celebrate Eid al-Adha, or the Festival of Sacrifice. Some will sacrifice animals, such as sheep or cows, to recall Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son in obedience to God. As Muslims perform the Hajj, we have a belief and practice segment on pilgrimages in several traditions. Our guide is Virginia Regan, a professor at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts and the curator of a traveling exhibit on pilgrimages in Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam. We spoke to her at the Rubin Museum of Art in New York City.
Pilgrimages are undertaken because people want to move beyond their normal, mundane life. They can be a one-day pilgrimage from one town to another town on a particular feast day. They can be a weekend. They can be actually years. In the past, pilgrimage really was vital in Christian religion, certainly in Muslim and in Buddhist. Only Islam requires the pilgrimage, the Hajj, so that it is one of the five pillars of Islam. However, that is nuanced. Only if you are financially and physically able. On pilgrimage, people experience the same activities. Therefore, it produces a sense of camaraderie, a sense of sharing. Constantly we see the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So that all three religions use handy objects to help focus people's thoughts. And prayer beads are some of the most ubiquitous. Prayer rugs that were brought by people, especially on the Hajj, where they could kneel down and then pray during the days of their journey. Qurans, small ones, were often carried with people. One of the most common kinds of souvenirs is absolutely the simplest, stones. Stones or dirt from the ground. People who have been on the Hajj and who have engaged in one of the rituals, which is the stoning of Satan, invariably they bring some of those stones home with them. You also have Muslims with clay from Karbala or other holy places pressed together that they then use in prayer. Although the doctrinal core of these religions differ, the practices that they use to help focus believers onto what is important, they are the same. Often in these three religions, you have an experience of circumambulation, walking around a site. The Kaaba is circumambulated during the performance of the Hajj. People walk seven times around this small building. Circumambulation, either of a mountain or of a stupa or another holy site in the Buddhist religion, is one of the most common ways of making a pilgrimage. And for Christians, certainly they'll circulate around the icon sometimes or the statue that they are venerating. People look for this physical activity that helps them find an interior focus. Physical hardship can be transformative. One of the things the Christians, the Buddhists, and the Muslims constantly come back to is humility. They make the effort, but God grants the grace.
Another form of pilgrimage for many Christians is walking a labyrinth from the entrance on the outside to the center within. Finally, this Monday, Billy Graham will be 93 years old. We wish him a very happy birthday. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, find us on YouTube, and watch us anytime, anywhere on smartphones and iPhones. There's also much more on our website. You can comment on all our stories and share them. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, music from the Salvation and Deliverance Church Choir from Tarboro, North Carolina. It recently won first place at the grand finale of Verizon's How Sweet the Sound Gospel Choir Competition.